back. Perhaps you can help solve a mystery, guys. What's up? Welcome to the podcast. It's the Stack Pack. You clicked on it, you know.
You're so full of excitement today.
Well, I mean, compared to last week, this is a fun episode. I'm David Howell. I'm joined by Daniel Benavidez.
Plum Dan. I'm thinking about changing my name to Plum Dan.
You said Plumber that last Dan.
Time. Yeah. Working on the hot pipes.
Sweating those pipes? Sweating that copper?
I'm going to refrain from doing like...
We don't sweat pipes, we crimp them.
Yeah, I'm going to refrain from doing the gay innuendos because I left way too many in last week's edit. It was like too much. And of course, Eli Dominguez.
What's up?
COVID Dominguez.
Oh man, I got it.
It's
too many date nights.
No, not enough.
Too many date nights had at the I double known, wide.
Had I known, I would have spent more time out there and just gotten it sooner.
Eli and your wife too, right? You guys both have COVID, but you guys are already on the way. You guys are already mending, right?
Yeah, we're already good. I got tested positive for being a sick ass foo.
Shit. I'm glad you guys are okay, and that obviously by our tone, nothing too intense. By the way, we're joking at it, but you
should case, not be joking case. Though.
But you didn't you had some. How was it? It wasn't easy, right? Was it a walk in the park?
No, it was no walk in the park. It was definitely worse than a cold. It started out with just cold symptoms. I was just like, you know, and I'm a positive person. I don't get sick very often. So I was like, man, this ain't it. This is nothing. I'm going to beat this in a day.
Well, did you?
While you were at the supermarket coughing on vegetables?
Yeah. I was like, I'm still going to go to work. No, actually, it was a good thing because I got symptoms after work on Thursday. I was off Friday, so I didn't have any interaction. But what started it was I got home and it felt like, I keep saying this, it felt like somebody stuck a bunch of knives down my throat and just beat the shit out of my throat.
You know, like strep, like when you start to get strep.
Yeah. And I was like, ugh, this is terrible. So that first night was awful because I couldn't sleep because it was just, my throat was just so raw. The next day I was just fatigued, tired. I started having like mucus and, you know, flu, like cold symptoms, whatever. And then Saturday.
Was your phlegm bright green?
No, it actually didn't turn green until later. So I just thought it, like I said, I thought it was a normal cold. And then on Saturday, I skipped breakfast because I slept in because I was still feeling sick. And then I had lunch. And as soon as I took a bite, I couldn't taste shit. And that's when I knew. I was like, oh, no.
Oh, fuck.
So, yeah. Climbed in the car. I just decided, let's just get everybody tested. We went to one of the drive-through testing facilities. And, yeah, we got our results. The kids all came back negative. But, yeah, but Jaws and I were not so lucky.
And probably now that you guys have all been in the same house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, is like even if I called work, they're letting me, like short-term disability, like they're not letting me go into work. I'm going to have to quarantine. They said even if somebody in my house had tested positive, they still would treat me as a positive case because I can't quarantine from there. Yeah. We're in the same house and I'm exposed. And so they would have kept me home regardless.
You should have built that man shed, you know. All those
I know. I should have. Actually, the attic would be the perfect spot for that. But
you could fall through again.
Yeah, so I could fall through again. God. Jesus, look at me and my... Well, I something with me, man.
See our first Christmas episode, I think. I don't know. It might have been the after Christmas. No, it was before,
It was after. It was after because I was I put it away.
You were putting it away. Yeah,
okay. I put all the Christmas junk away. But it's been cool. It's been cool. I mean, I'm good now. The worst part, I got to say, was the first couple of days. But after that, it took a while for my sense of taste to come back. And it's still not quite there. I'm drinking a Miller Lite right now, and I told them it tastes a little soapy. But it's getting there. I guess Miller Lite just tastes like that anyway, maybe.
It's like, I don't know. I really can't tell if that's a part of the disease. Well, it's good to hear that you're on the mend and doing better. Today, we are going to talk about some true crime, bunch of missing people or unexplained deaths and missing, and we got some stuff.
Loaded episode. Gotta say, I don't think there was a disinteresting story in this.
No, which is lucky. Today we're covering season 5, episode 4 of the original Robert Stack hosted series. Get it on Prime Video, IMDb TV,
YouTube,
and, YouTube, and Peacock. Peacock.
The did Peacock NBC app. Pick it up?
Yeah, they have it all. And
when you could watch it in the middle of your breaks of The Office.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Man, I mean, Peacock's not paying us, but if you pay for the Peacock, it's like $5 a month. They have extended Office episodes.
Yeah, they do.
Have you seen any yet?
Yeah, I saw a couple of them already.
I watched. They have season 3. It's not every episode, but most of them. And they're going to start putting more seasons out.
Yeah.
As they edit them, they're going through it with the original editors and stuff. Yeah,
my favorite deleted scene is with Creed when he's on the electric guitar on the boat. If you haven't seen it, you need to watch it. It's great. It's where where Jim breaks up with that. With Amy Adams when she was first on in the it's amazing.
Oh, that they didn't add that. They just started with season 3. I wonder why they didn't do season 2.
No, yeah, it's just season 3, but I think it's a part of the season 3 deleted scenes.
I know the DVDs had deleted scenes as well. But yeah, Peacock's cool. They have Unsolved Mysteries now. So this first case is a wanted case, and we're going to be talking about this shithead name, what's his name? What's the guy's name? David Gordon Smith, right?
Gordon Bombay.
David Gordon Smith was this little shithead, and let's just tell the story. So, we're going to Catoosa, Oklahoma, which is a suburb of Tulsa, and it's September 1st of 1978. It's the morning, and two men hit up a tag agency to steal a bunch of plates. And a tag agency is like an independent business that would make license plates. Essentially.
Well, they didn't make them. They sell them.
They sell them and then like register them to the car, I guess.
Yeah.
Does this happen? Is this a thing now still?
I don't think they're not independent though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like in Texas that you can get your license plates through, you know, like the DMV, or you can go to a title agency.
I didn't know that they did that.
So I guess a lot of people like to, or thieves, bad guys like to rob these places and take stacks and stacks of unregistered license plates, I guess, right?
I guess to replace and put on cars when they're committing more crime.
Yeah, so they could fence, right? Fencing. That's a word.
Fence or hawk.
Hawk or fence or.
Well, I mean, you don't know a guy that will like register your car if it fails its inspection.
Yeah, I guess I do.
Hector.
See? Stolen plates or stolen tags.
Ooh. So it's 8 a.m. and two men are robbing the tag agency.
Could you say they were Robin Hood?
They jump in with the guns. And in the reenactment, and I guess this actually happened, like, as the lady sees the guys come in, she's like, we're being robbed. Help us, please.
And then it hangs up.
Oh, yeah. She's on the phone. So she's like, we're being robbed. Call the cops.
And that probably helped or probably, I don't know, maybe didn't. Maybe they should have just like, oh, my God, what would have hurt if they took a bunch of license plates? But anyways, so the person that responded was Chief J.B. Hamby. He was a veteran lawman in the area, and
can we just take a moment and describe like how the photo they go with to like show this dude just shows him as like he just like the look of him in his headshot is like Walker Texas Ranger like.
Oh, yeah. It looks like a headshot.
Badass, he looks like a badass
with his hat and his stash. Oh no, he didn't have a stash. That's how badass his picture was that I thought he had a mustache and he doesn't. He doesn't have a mustache. He just looks like a badass.
Yeah, the picture looked like it was an ad for a TV show or like how an actor would have different have them in different outfits to see what how big range they had. Like like, here's me dressed as a doctor, and here's me, like, next to a, like, dressed as a cowboy. and he was described as his coworkers as a worst nightmare if you're on the wrong side of the law.
In other words, a badass.
He's a badass. So he goes in there in the reenactment. He tells them to freeze, and
they don't.
And after that, apparently about 20 rounds are shot off in a matter of seconds, and one robber is killed. Kind of ironically, by a bullet. From his own gun that ricocheted back and hit him in the head.
Oof.
And then, of course, J.B. Hamby was shot, and he stumbles out of the building and goes next door to the laundromat, where he dies while reciting the Lord's Prayer. A lady, like, goes to help him. And in the reenactment, she knows his name.
Right. And I was going to say
the laundromat.
I don't know. I guess it was a smaller town. So like a smaller county.
Well, you also got to take into account, like, this is like, you know, back in the '70s where you knew the cop that walked the beat or like that was always in your area.
Yeah. Possible. We don't know.
Yeah. So I just thought that was an interesting detail that they don't really specify, but, as the guy's dying, she starts reciting the prayer with him, and he doesn't make it. Super sad.
Yeah. And did we mention the other gunman fled? He was able to get away while
he was shot twice and escaped. And the thing you left out is, as Hamby left the plate agency after being shot, he was actually somewhat in trying to pursue the suspect. Like, he was reloading his gun before he changed direction to go into the laundromat, because he finally realized, like,
he knew, like, oh, this is pretty serious. This isn't a flesh wound.
Yeah. So the other asshole gets caught a couple hours later because he's at the hospital being treated for the gunshots he got from the cop. So they arrest his ass. His name's David Gordon Smith. He is the son of a professor, and they were a rich couple from Stillwater, Oklahoma. He gets sentenced to first-degree murder. Fucking asshole. In June 1979, Smith begins his life sentence. They find out that the bullet that killed JB was definitely from his gun. No doubt about it. And he's a piece of shit. Good riddance.
But that's not where our story ends.
That's not how the story ends. Yeah, I know. They do say this was his only brush with the law before this, because he was kind of, you know, he came from a well-to-do family. So he becomes, like, inmate number one, like goody two-shoe, a model inmate, a model prisoner, as they say.
He was actually prisoner of the year 1984.
Well, Mr. Prisoner?
Yeah, yeah. That would have been the year he escapes, isn't it?
85 he escaped. Okay.
So, yeah, he's such a good prisoner that they classified him as a trustee. Apparently, some prisoners get trustee status, and that gives them...
We've had this discussion about trustees before, you know, where you get to go to the mall and buy Christmas presents.
Yeah, yeah, you get to go buy Christmas gifts for your fellow inmates, and then all of a sudden, you just get...
If you knew that... But don't you think you would think it was less stupid if they used the word trustee? You're like, oh, well, he was a trustee. Okay. Who cares if he brutally murdered a little girl? Yeah, we're referring to an episode where we covered the new Unsolved Mysteries. From Volume 2. Really
tragic. Wasn't that episode also about the same time period around this?
I'm sure.
The trustee program?
I don't know. But the 80s were dumb for people.
The 80s were dumb. That's it.
the trustee program. Yeah, that's we sunset that, guys. That was a failure. Yeah, that's my bad.
So with this trustee status, he gets a job working at the lake by the prison at the water pumping station. And this guy lived alone, and he just worked there and lived there by himself. And there was a guard would stroll by every hour and check on him.
Yeah. And he got married too, right?
Yeah. In 1982, this dude got married, and I don't know if she was a 17-year-old girl,
right, or
if
the picture just shows 17.
Was her when she was 17. Were you confused by that?
Yeah, I was too. So these women, man, and they're they want that bad boy.
I think she was just 17. I don't know. Because he was really young looking. Yeah. You know, like in the picture, he looks like he might have been 20 tops.
Yeah. Isn't there a song that's called 17? Talks about a guy falling in love with a 17-year-old.
By a big star?
I don't remember who sings it, but I remember in my head I'm thinking,
let 17. Let me take you home. Let me walk you home from school. You know. God damn it. No, I'm not even. I swear to God, it's a great song. It sounds so creepy. Speaking of Buffy, I'll shut up about Buffy, but I'm watching this episode. She's supposed to be 16 years old, and this 225-year-old vampire is like telling her he's in love with her. I'm like, dude, God, it's creepy that
creep game.
He was 30 years old, and this guy's 225 years old.
What do they call
that? That is just the deep government trying to tell you that it is okay for pedophilia.
Yeah.
Sorry, my QAnon showing.
My daughter would call that. She would call him Cringe Crew. Oh, that's cringe crew.
What a good troop. So we don't know how old this girl is. Okay, that's how we got there. Okay, so anyway, he gets married in jail somehow in 1982. In 1984 he has his first parole hearing, a whopping 10 years ahead of schedule, and they decide pretty quickly after reading, oh yeah, he fucking murdered a cop,
that nope,
he's definitely going to stay the fucking jail. In a little weird accent, he says to the parole people, like, I go to church and I got married.
Oh yeah. It's awesome. It's like, well, I haven't been in any fights since I've been in jail. I haven't killed any other officers. I got a job. I go to church. Have I mentioned I haven't killed any more officers?
Yeah. It's easy to be a model citizen when you're not, like, out living amongst the people.
The guy, the prosecutor, the FBI guy calls him, he's like, he's trying to convince us. I wish he said model citizen, because that's less stupid than what he did say. It was. He's like, he was trying to convince us that he was Joe Clean Citizen. You know, that old chestnut, Joe Clean Citizen. But yeah, he definitely didn't get paroled, but he was able to continue his job at the lake.
Little do you know, you just offended someone in Oklahoma named Joe Clean.
Who is a proud citizen?
I am an upstanding citizen. I go to church. I volunteer.
Hey, but it's funny. He's like, well, I guess I get to go back to my job where I get checked on every hour by a security guard. Did it say? Okay, when we get to this next part, I have a question about.
All right, yeah. Something they say. Joe Clean Citizen continues his job at the lake. And October 28th of 1985, he fucking dips, yo.
Yeah, he goes, heads up, just went out to get Christmas gifts, guys.
Yeah, fucking.
No,
Clean,
so
Getaway.
The guy, Joe Clean Getaway, the guy, the security guard comes and says that he checked on him and where he normally sleeps. So he slept there? Like he lived there?
Yeah. He lived at the pump house, unsupervised.
At 3 a.m., he went for his hourly check and found a mannequin. Where did he get a mannequin?
I don't know. I'm sure his girlfriend or his wife probably brought it for him, no?
Oh. They say that his wife picked him up and they went into the nearby town and they were able to find out that they mailed a couple of letters.
Why would they mail letters? To who? Who would be? Hey, just broke out of prison. Just want to let y'all know.
Joe Beth Smith was his wife, 17 years old. The days before she left, she closed her bank account, sold her furniture, and borrowed $1,000 from friends. This is what makes me think, like, damn, being 17 years old in the 80s was very different.
Yeah.
What kind of 17-year-old today would have a bank account and furniture?
Yeah.
And friends that would give her a grand.
Just steal it from their mom.
She shows you what's wrong with our generation.
Is it?
No.
I don't know. We don't even know if she's actually 17, so it just shows you what's wrong with the past generation, the one that made and edited the Unsolved Mysteries episode. Yeah, so anyway, 4 months later, February 1986, somebody cites these two. They see him with a female in Arkansas.
He fucking dips, yo.
And yes, again, he fucking dips you. The cops respond to that. He's gone. FBI still thinks that he's dangerous. And at the time of this episode airing, he was still missing. J.B. Henby was a decent man who didn't deserve to die. And this episode originally aired, I think, in the fall. And when it re-aired in March.
In the springtime, baby.
Yeah, the right person was at home, spring break. And they cracked this case. Unsolved Mysteries did it again. Ticker, ticker, ticker.
Did it again. By golly. And where was he? Where was our boy, David Gordon Smith?
I keep wanting to say David Gordon Green, the horror director, but it's not him. The right, well, actually, he's not a, more of a comedy director, whatever. The right viewer was in South Dakota, and so was David Gordon Smith. He was a service manager at a car dealership.
Can you believe it? He made it. He made himself a service manager.
What is that? What do you think that means? Like, he works in the mechanical side?
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spearfish, South Dakota, to be more specific, is the town he was in. The FBI tip led them directly to the car dealership, and they arrested him there. And he told them exactly who he was, and there was no drama.
Yeah. It was a Ford dealership, and ironically enough, they booked him and they threw him in the back, and the car they were driving was a Ford. they show the actual footage. It's amazing.
That's Ford Tough. So this asshole was returned to Oklahoma to serve the rest of his life sentence, and they tacked on 4 more years for his attempt for his escape.
That's actually just like a slap on the wrist, if you ask me. You get 4 more years.
I know. Might as well try it again, right?
Yeah.
He has like life.
Only 4 years? Okay.
Maybe next time they'll
maybe next time he'll actually go to Mexico.
Or he could be like the person that goes to Walmart for the whole prison and gets food, and they could entrust him with some more duties. I'm sure there's a guy who goes to the laundromat back and forth. He can do that.
Hey, you killed a cop, right? Cool. We're going to have you work in the armory, polishing the rifles.
Yeah, polish the rifles. I'm going to the mall next Tuesday. Anybody need some Christmas presents for your family that you're not seeing because you're all in jail?
I'll mail them out to you. I'll take them to the post.
So that's case one.
I'm going to need, speaking of Mexico, we're going there next, our next case.
Yeah, we're going south of the border.
I'm going to need a beer for this. Hold on.
It better be a Dos Equis.
Dos Equis. Before we get to the next case, I want to mention this movie on HBO Max that is like one of those, like, is in theaters and but is on HBO Max for like the month.
What? Which one is it?
It's called The Little Things. And it's definitely, if it'll scratch a true crime.
Itch. Is that with Denzel Washington?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I've already wanted to see it. Did you already watch it?
I watched it.
I want to watch it again. I forgot it came out today.
It came out on Friday.
Or yesterday.
Actually. But I want to say, I'm not usually a person that runs to Denzel movies, but he's like this certain age and he plays this kind of just older cop character that's very like toned down. It's not like my man, you know, it's not like that whole like the impression you hear of Denzel. It's much more like toned down. I really liked it. Dude, it's him, Rami Malek, and Jared Leto.
Yeah, and Jared Leto.
And it's a difficult, I don't know, I don't want to say too much, but it's not one of those ones that's going to give you a definite beginning, middle, and end, a satisfying answer. It's kind of realistic in that way. The reviews weren't amazing, but the ending is got like a realistic kind of like gut punch like it that I really good. Liked. Yeah,
it looked good. I it was on my list.
Yeah, I recommend it. I think for this month until like the end of February, it's going to be on. It's going to be on there.
Yeah, it looks good.
Wonder Woman is gone, and they replace it with this. But yeah, I recommend it.
I'm doing it.
The next case is an unexplained death, and like Eli said, we are traveling south of the border, and we are and we're also traveling back in time to June of 1992 when Joe Amato and his brother Mario went to Mexico with their girlfriends, and they just wanted to have a good old time. They were, I guess, San Diego adjacent, close enough to San Diego. They went to a resort called they went to a resort in Rosarito Beach, Mexico, which was 35 miles away from San Diego. They got there a little after 1 a.m., and the exact date there was June 6th of 1992. Now, the reason they were able to get this cool place was because Mario's girlfriend, I think they were the older couple, Mario's girlfriend's friend was the actual condo owner. I mean, we don't know the specifics, but a friend of Mario's girlfriend, I don't know. I think I wrote her name down here somewhere. I want to say Brenda, but I don't know.
Wait, they got anyway. They got the hair right though. The actor that they cast for that guy.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
You know. Did you notice that Joe Amato said "you know" after almost everything he said?
Mm-hmm.
You know. Okay. Anyway. So yeah. So they're hanging out. They're partying. They bust out the tequila. Ooh, yeah.
I could go for some tequila right now.
I find that culturally. Offensive.
Why? They were Mexicans visiting Mexico drinking tequila.
That's what you do.
Yeah. So around 3 or 4 in the morning, Apollo, wake up. We're doing a podcast.
You're okay, buddy. You're okay.
Don't have a drink. Did you hear him?
Yeah, he was like having a dream.
Apollo, wake up. It's fine. Okay. So around 3 or 4 in the morning is when Joe and his girlfriend start to get tired and they go to bed. And apparently the younger couple stays up. And apparently around 7 in the morning, Joe woke up and he could hear them arguing. And then Mario came in the room and said, like he wanted to leave. Like, he's like, I can't stand her. Like, let's get out of here. Like, I want to go home. Why would
you go on vacation with somebody? Then the sex must have been really good, I guess.
It just sounded like a volatile couple. The next morning, in the late morning, apparently everything was fine. Everyone had forgiven everybody. Joe and Debbie, not Brenda, sorry, Deborah. Debbie, Joe and Debbie went on a romantic drive by themselves, and they didn't get back till the afternoon. But apparently during that time, Mario and his girlfriend got in a fight, and the cops were called. I don't know how accurate the reenactment is, but...
Either way, the cops showed up. I don't know who called them, if maybe another guest called them. We don't know.
Yeah, the cop showed up, and I was thinking of, because in the reenactment, the girlfriend is like, yeah, take him away, yeah, take him. And I was just thinking, I was like, if this bitch actually called the cops, she killed him.
Yeah,
like,
pretty much.
If you could be that stupid to call the cops on somebody that you're with in a foreign country, it doesn't matter what country, you're not from that country, you're going to get cops involved, the law is going to be involved. I mean, who knows? He could have been abusive. Who knows? But
yeah, I'm
just saying, if they were just like drunkenly arguing with each other and she called the cops on him, that's his death sentence right there.
And then if she knew actually what happened in a Mexican prison too, I don't think you'd want to go to Mexican jail at all.
Yeah, so apparently the cops were called. In the reenactment, he, like, is shirtless, and she won't let him back in, and then she, like, throws his clothes at him, and then the cops come and take him away. Apparently he's arrested for public drunkenness and disorderly conduct.
So, yeah, they lock him up. The brother and the girlfriend, Debbie, come back home. Nobody's at the resort anymore. They can't even find homeboy's girlfriend. So they go in, cops show up looking for his girlfriend, and they're like, we don't know where she is. Check the bar down the road.
Yeah, they're like frantic, right? Like, where is she? And that part's still not fully explained.
It's not. They just said, we just want to ask her some questions. And they're like, okay, well, she's probably at the bar down the road. Or they said next door, one of the two. So anyways, they go, and then I think Debbie gets ready, right? Like, she starts putting on her clothes.
Yeah,
and
she's
like, I want to follow these guys and see what's going on. So she goes and she shows up, right? She eventually shows up to the bar because she wasn't there at first. But I don't – do they ever explain?
Oh, you mean the girlfriend, like
– Yeah, because they wanted to look – you said that they came frantic looking for her, like, where is she? Where we want to ask her more questions.
No, they followed the cops to the bar.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But the girlfriend eventually shows up.
Yeah, she like walks in like there's nothing wrong that happened, and she says she doesn't know – where Mario is, which is weird and contradictory to the reenactment of when the cops came. I mean,
yeah, she obviously knows.
It's possible that she didn't know that the cops took him. Like, maybe he was like pounding on the door and she didn't know the cops came, but. Cause like in the reenactment, she's like, I don't know. He's probably dead. He's probably in a ditch somewhere.
No, he's probably in a gutter.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that.
And it's, and it's like, damn, what a cold asshole. If she really just like didn't tell him that
he wasn't even like formally charged. He was just in a holding cell. Like they really didn't charge him with anything. Right.
Correct.
That's what they say. So a couple hours later, a group of detectives show up, right?
Oh man, the reenactment was so good with these guys. Like they came in, like they looked so like they did not look, first of all, they didn't look like detectives. Second of all, like they just didn't know what to do with themselves. Like the guy was fidgeting. They didn't know
what to do with their hands. There's just too many of them.
It also kind of looked like they were wearing a suit for like the first time.
Yeah, it totally did. It totally did.
Oh, so these are like cufflinks.
It was like one detective with like five trainees. and they show up and they give a name that Joe doesn't recognize, and then he says his brother's name, and they're like, yeah, that's him.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
And then they proceed to show him a picture of his dead brother. Oh, no, wait.
Book him. They don't book him. They take him. They take him to the –
They tell him his brother's dead, and then they take him to the office. Yeah, well, they do. In the reenactment, they tell him that his brother's dead, and then they take him to the office, and that's where they show him the pictures to identify him.
These guys. I just have the video playing. It's so funny.
One detective and his five trainees.
It's actually three people, but dude, they do look so lost. They're just like Mario Vicente Amaro. Yes, that's that guy.
Yeah,
man, sure.
Yeah, they're like they give him a different name. It's so weird. They tell him that he hung himself in prison with his own sweatshirt. Yeah,
they don't look like detectives. They look like henchmen.
Yeah.
They look like the guy that my bookie sends when I don't pay my bets.
When I can't pay back my debts. When I short the GameStop stock when they come looking for me. That's who they send.
They tell Joe that his brother hung himself in prison. They show him a picture of him laying on concrete without his shirt, and they say that he's hung himself with his sweatshirt on a piece of metal that was three feet tall
from the door.
And then later they say that it was above the cell door, but it would still be hard. I don't know. It's confusing.
It is confusing. Not to add even more confusion, they also claim when he asks about the other inmates that were in there, he's like, well, who was in there with him? And there was five guys, but they were all sleeping. He's like, sleeping at 5 p.m.?
Hey.
Yeah. Well, I'm picturing them in different cells. I don't think they're in the same cell, but they probably were. The tequila
was flowing that day, bro.
I don't know, man. And typically holding cells, though, I think they cram them in there.
Yeah, they do. But they put multiple people.
One shitter.
Yeah, and one guy that's just like, jacking off, maybe, but you can't really tell.
Which jail did you go to?
San Antonio. Yeah, so they tell the brother that he hung himself by a sweater, which is really ridiculous.
Is it, though?
Kind of. Joe just knows nothing's right. He thinks this is super weird. The Mexican authorities didn't release the body right away. They wanted to make sure they were done with their autopsy. And when they finally did release the body, they said the cause of death was loss of oxygen to the brain, which is hanging, right? And that's when Joe called his congressman. And that's when the U.S. got involved in the U.S. consulate and tried to resolve this issue. But right out of the gate, it's odd that the Mexican authorities didn't immediately contact the United States consulate.
Yeah.
Because somebody, you know, an American citizen died on Mexican soil.
And I don't like the explanation that this guy that they interviewed gives.
Oh, yeah. He kind of just smiled. He thinks his explanation – it's weird. He thinks he's making really good points.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you're not saying anything, brother.
And then he gives that smirk. He's, well
– yeah, he does smile.
He claims that because he had family with him that that's why they weren't notified right away. He's all, well, if they have family, we just tell the family and then we write a letter.
That's just how we do it.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think – I saw the episode two times, and that's the first time I understood that is what that statement meant.
So yo, can we talk
– that up, Eli.
Can we talk, though, about the dude who performed the autopsy? Did you notice his
this look? This is highly unethical. No,
this guy's
is look. Is that a bullet? Sorry, this guy, I was doing last week's – I was doing the Huey Long autopsy.
No, this is definitely not a Huey, the guy who performed Huey Long's autopsy. This guy has a mustache and a mullet, and it's amazing.
I did not notice, and I'm upset that I didn't. Oh, it's great. So once the U.S. gets involved, Joe orders an autopsy.
Oh, also, we didn't mention that they didn't allow him to bring the body.
I sort of did, but yeah. It's worth noting that they wanted to make sure they were done with their autopsy. And what their autopsy said was hanging, and that's it. So Joe orders a second autopsy, and what that concludes is that there was massive injuries to his liver. Like, he was beaten hard. He was beaten the fuck out of. And they think that he wouldn't have been able to physically hang himself with the injuries he sustained to his torso, I guess. Be more general about it.
Yeah.
But they said he had massive liver injuries.
And that wasn't from the tequila.
Well, see, that's something I wanted to bring up is, like, you know, they say they were heavily drinking, but neither the Mexican autopsy or the third party autopsy that his brother gets discuss a toxicology report.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he was super wasted. And also, I don't think it's out of the
realm. I mean, it's Mexico. They're at a resort. If you're not wasted at a Mexican resort, well, you're doing it
wrong.
Also take
into the account, like, all right, you're super wasted. You don't speak the language. You're in a Mexican holding cell. You're drunk. You don't know what's going to happen to you. You get into an altercation with a fellow inmate. You panic because you don't want to die by their hands.
I was saying, yeah, we should point out same thing, similar to what Dan saying, but like you are drunk off your ass and just get into a fucking life or death argument with this person that you think is important and that you love. And then you just fucking, you're like, I'm in a Mexican prison. I'm fucked. And you just kill yourself. I mean, there are instances and situations where I believe that maybe he did hang himself, but it is all too weird that he was just like one moment alive and one moment.
Within a matter of hours. It's crazy. Yeah. Imagine, like, you go out for a drive and all of a sudden you come back and your brother's gone, first of all. And then you find out that he was taken to – he's being held in a Mexican jail or wherever he's being held. And then all of a sudden you find out
in the same, like –
how would Epstein's family feel
that he's in jail and he's dead? Like, boom,
that's
boom.
So crazy. Like,
what do you mean? Like, you know, he was arrested, let alone just maybe, dead.
Yeah,
maybe he had the same guards that were guarding Epstein.
Oh yeah, probably, definitely had to. Anyways, this definitely was fishy. Same type of scenario here.
So once the U.S. gets involved, the then Mexican president actually is the one who reopens the case with cooperation from the American government. So in January of 93, he's
what exhumed. Do they do, Dan? What do they do?
Dig him up.
Dig it up.
Dig him up. We should have a theme song whenever.
We should.
A drinking game whenever somebody.
Dig him up.
Dig him up. Dig him up.
Dig him up.
Dig him up. Dig him up.
I'll just make a hip hop beat on fucking GarageBand. Dig him up. That'll be good. But it's not funny that people don't do their jobs right and they have to dig up the people that are trying to rest eternally.
It defeats the purpose of rest in peace.
Yeah, it's fucked. But anyway, they dig him up.
It's worse than when they do it more than once.
It's like when you're in a hotel and you have the do not disturb sign on your fucking door and the maid not only knocks, like they knock and you say, I am good. But then 30 minutes later, they fucking call your phone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's the worst.
Like, are you sure we can't clean? Yeah. So they reclassified as a homicide, but that's kind of all the exhumation gave them, I guess. Apparently, oh, at some point,
there is one thing about the third autopsy. Sorry, because it kind of ties into the update. On the third autopsy, they discover that there is fiber around his neck that is actually rope fiber and not sweater fiber.
Oh, really? That makes
sense. And we didn't mention how one of the people thought that maybe just this cop beat him up and thought that he was fucking like, they're like, oh, we beat the shit out of him. And
oh,
then,
and no.
Then they just hung him like themselves. Like he was like passed out.
He's going to die anyway.
Yeah. And like, we can just say that he did this himself in the prison. So yeah, that lends credence to that. Apparently at some point a Mexican police officer was convicted of killing Mario. Yeah.
Yes.
But
yeah, I mean, like they say in the episode, I mean, they say all this in the episode, it was overturned and there's been no other suspects. Wow. Were we able to find anything else about that?
Yes, we were.
Yes, we were.
So 4 months later, in May, a former police officer by the name of Jose Antonio
Verduzco
Flores.
Verduzco.
That's a lot of names.
Verduzco.
Verduzco. Yeah. It has to Verduzco. Be Verduzco.
Yeah, so Jose Antonio Verduzco,
Verduzco
Flores.
Hi, Daniel.
Flores.
I am a terrible Hispanic. was arrested for his murder. Two witnesses that were actually in a holding cell claimed that they saw him and Mario get into a struggle and basically beat him up and then use the sweater to choke him and then stage the hanging. But he was sentenced to 8.5 years, but that conviction was shortly overturned months later, and he was released. Other inmates testified that they had seen Mario being beaten by another officer, but they weren't able to positively identify him.
Yeah.
So as of right now, they suspect that it was actually two police officers that killed him, but nothing absolutely official.
So he was probably just wasted off his ass and these dudes just beat him up too hard. Like, he's probably just being a stupid American.
Yeah. I could definitely see
unfortunately.
That Americans are stupid.
Stupid.
I don't know. I don't know, Lloyd. The French are assholes. can we talk about this billionaire, this oil billionaire?
Yeah. We have one more unexplained death for you guys today.
Can you really please talk about the fire?
The fire. These are all good. These are good.
Can you please, talk. You have to post the picture of him, his like portrait of him on the couch.
All right. Yeah.
I want to know, is that before or after the facelift?
That was what we said, because not to get ahead of ourselves, but once this guy got rich, he had two facelifts, and that picture that they showed doesn't look like I mean, he looks like a happy man. He's definitely making a creepy smile, but if he paid for that face, then
you need to get your money back.
Yeah.
You're a terrible billionaire.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that he's
millionaire.
It's not that he's ugly, but I'm just like, I mean, what was wrong with your face before? Shit, if that's what you paid for.
Was he a billionaire or a millionaire? I thought
millionaire.
He was
a millionaire. Yeah. When he died, he pulled in $66 million. So he told me.
I thought they said he was an oil billionaire.
Let's get into it. Dude's name is Ed Baker. He was a rich guy, but not always a rich guy. That's important. He ran a company called Vanguard International.
Vandalay Industries. I work for Vandalay Industries.
It later became Nexium and went on. And now the Vanguard is a man named Keith Raniere. Did you ever watch any of The Vow?
No.
Oh, you should watch The Vow on HBO Max. It's so good, dude. It's like, oh, it's... You'll be hooked. It's a documentary about Keith Raniere and NXIVM. Another thing I wanted to mention is one of our cases we've covered on this podcast is getting a full HBO documentary.
Which one?
The Dale.
Which one's the Dale? Remind
the
me.
The lady, the sort of lady.
Dude looks like a lady.
I mean, you know what?
The car.
Yeah.
The car.
In this day and age, she's a lady. Who wasn't always a lady, I suppose. And they're making a whole documentary about her and her failed Ponzi scheme, right? Because everybody donated money to her and she just...
That's right.
Yeah, so that'll be... I feel like I'm really curious to see that documentary.
I love how they framed that when they first showed her, we're like, we've all like kind of were scratching our heads a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's like another cool thing about the story, though, is like she didn't give a fuck. Like she was gonna. She's like that part of her was not a Ponzi scheme. Like
no, not at all.
She was definitely probably happier being that lady.
Yeah.
I believe that part is the realest thing of that story, and I hope I hope that's part of the focus of the documentary.
Yeah.
Because I it's been a while, but. She like lived as a man as well, right? And that was like a whole secret lady identity sort of thing.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's been a while. I don't want to.
But I can't wait. That's cool. So it's an HBO doc that they're doing.
Yeah, apparently supposed to come out like to yesterday. I think it might already be out.
Oh man, they do such good work.
I saw something that said like I swear it was January 31st. So yeah, that should be good.
the Lady and the Dale is what it's called.
Is it a series or a movie?
It's
a movie,
right? Premieres January 31st.
So it's already on HBO Max?
Oh, yeah. I'm so going to watch it as soon as we're done.
Hell yeah. I'm curious. That's an interesting story.
They call it The Con Artist and The Car on New York Times.
Yeah. She was an interesting lady. She could definitely convince some people. She could definitely talk some people into stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone liked her, right? Like, from what I remember. Anyway, yeah, so check that out. And maybe we'll talk about it next week a little more.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, that could count as a mystery movie, which we haven't done
could.
In a while.
We could do that. We usually do them at the end of a season, but we've had, like, two seasons, kind of.
Yeah.
Because we did the Netflix special. So, yeah, maybe that would be actually kind of cool.
It'd be fun to do something a little different, maybe in a couple weeks after we give people a chance to check it out. But yeah, so back to this story. Last Unexplained Death of the Night, like we said, Ed Baker, Vanguard International, Vanguard Groups International. His wife, Mary, gives us a lot of the story. She tells us how she watched him build that company
first
from
wife.
The ground up.
His first
Actually,
wife.
It's... His second wife is what
Oh,
it
is
said.
It his second wife?
Yeah, second Oof. Wife.
This guy's so, running yeah. through him.
Oh, man, he really does. So she watched him build this. He started fucking
he's got
with
more.
He's
got as many faces as he does wives.
So he started fucking with oil in 1980. He was promoting oil well exploration in the Houston area.
That's so funny. Every time I hear about somebody who's like in the oil business, I picture them like talking like if they have hot molasses in their mouth. That
they
like
have a big cigar in their
deep,
mouth.
Deep southern drawl.
Yeah.
And they have like actual boots made of cow.
Yeah, with like the actual like hide of the cow, like the fur still. So it was Houston in the 80s. Which was a fucking great time to get into oil. So he was making a shit ton of money after, you know, investing in some sites.
Imagine all the cocaine he did.
Probably a lot.
So many lewds.
Mary, his first wife, explains that he was a brilliant
You said
strategist.
It was his second wife. You said God, second wife.
God, yeah. The lady who talks mostly. I mean, none of the other wives talk. The lady who tells the story, Mary, she says that he was a brilliant strategist and the things he did weren't, while not legal now at the time, were legal then. And the people that invested with him knew this. They say that he founded Vanguard Industries with Mary being one of his three employees. And then 4 years later, they made $19 million in a whole year.
What?
And wealth made, like we said, wealth made this dude become very different. Ed Baker went crazy. It's March 1984. He's super rich at this point. Then he divorces Mary. He's like, peace the fuck out. He starts getting into gambling. This is when he gets his two facelifts and he gets disco lessons.
Yeah.
In 1984.
Dude, that's so funny. I didn't even think about that. The year disco lessons was disco was way dead by then.
Like, yeah, dude.
What's going on?
Yeah, yeah, it really was.
A midlife crisis for sure.
So 6 years, a little late.
Yeah.
So on top of all these other things, he buys a badass Jaguar, which will come into play a little later. In September of 1984, he got married and then divorced 5 months later. And then he married an employee 4 days after that second, third marriage was finalized.
Oh, man, this guy, he's a character.
And so during all this affluent spending and marrying and all that shit, his finances are going in the toilet. By 1985, people just have given up. They stop investing. He has to start borrowing money to maintain his life of luxury. He's looking at also at this time he was looking at serious tax problems and lots of lawsuits and different charges from certain investors because he wasn't paying out on those investments.
So yeah, he was running a Ponzi scheme, right? Like he was taking money.
By this
money
point, yeah, like I from the way I'm understanding it is like not at first.
Yeah.
But then like after the oil and all that shit's dried up, it started to become that.
It doesn't seem like the oil dried up. It seems like his investments weren't coming in as quickly as he anticipated, and his company expanded far quicker than.
Or they weren't coming in as quickly as he could spend money that he didn't have or whatever.
Because like the company was like they were producing oil. They were legitimately producing oil. It's just it seems like he was burning the cash before they could make more cash.
And he had to, at this point, get a bailout from a very shady unnamed source.
Named Fat Tony.
It could have been Fat Tony.
it probably was Fat Tony.
Make him an offer. You can't refuse or you'll show be is that where burning they like, in a cornfield.
What show is that where they like make up a generic gangster name? Is it Good Girls or something? Where they like make up a generic gangster name and then they like eventually, like somebody finds the person, like fat, I swear it's like fat something.
Yeah, no, maybe it was Good Girls.
I don't maybe remember that part. Girls. No, I don't remember that happening.
I feel like Eli would remember.
No, I would remember that, Fat Tony. I'd remember that for sure.
So he hires a PI to look into this unnamed source who may or may not be connected to the mafia, which that sounds stupid.
Well, I got a cousin Tony. He works in the concrete shoe business.
Oh, man.
So let's cut to November 6th of 85 around 7 p.m. He shows up at his ex-wife Mary's house and he's freaked out. He's paranoid. He says he's being followed. He said he's gotten multiple death threats in the form of letters and calls.
What do the calls say? It's your time to die or something like that?
Yeah, your time. It's your day to die.
Your day to die.
And he was scared to call the police, I guess because he was a crook. And he just kind of showed up in a tizzy, was all freaked out, and then he drove away, and that's the last time Mary ever saw him again. Sandy, who is the new wife, said that Baker had just sent her out of town because he didn't know what was going to happen. So he just sent her to Austin, I think.
Sent her to South by Southwest.
To go watch.
Actually, no, he was classy.
Vader Fort.
He was classy. He centered it. He centered Austin City Limits. He paid for the badges and everything.
Paid for the badges.
Anyway, so yeah, Sandy gets sent out of town to Austin to hang out with the hipsters. And then at that point, Ed Baker holds up in his room where he keeps getting threatening calls saying that it's his time to die, and he's freaking out. And then 2 days later, November 8th rolls around, and sheriffs find his torched, beyond torched car.
Yeah, and by the way, what was next to it? They just casually just mentioned that there was a white beaten person like here in maybe his 20s.
Yeah, there was like a young man who was his hands were tied behind his back and he was beaten to death.
Yeah, and just random.
They thought that maybe he had something to do with the killing, and then he was killed so they could just clean up the mess.
But what did the detective discover?
They eventually discovered that it was an unrelated drug deal. It was the reason that he was killed, but that also it was just it was the dumping area.
This is where they dump their trash.
It was Body Park.
How many other bodies did they find? It's like, oh, it's just the dumping area.
Dead hookers here all the time.
Yeah. It's corpse clearing. You're gonna go have a nice picnic at corpse clearing. Hopefully you don't find a corpse today.
How did you come up with that name, corpse? That's amazing. God, I wish I had your wit, man. You're so witty. So fast.
What was the first one I said? Body Park? And the corpse clearing. It sounds like something that the teens go in a Stephen King novel.
Yeah.
So you're going to go park at corpse clearing?
Oh, I'm going to go park. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was a
don't take any extra gasoline. It might catch on fire.
It's like
unrelated
yeah,
drug
gonna,
charge.
I'm going to go out and have a cigarette. Just mind the bodies.
This guy. Yeah, this guy. Come on. Unrelated. I mean, can't you tell? Like, can't you tell with like the dental records?
Did you see
that
YouTube video of Logan Paul walking around corpse clearing?
He actually found
a corpse, and people were like, "Oh, Logan, Jesus, gross!"
What he really did? Was this recent?
That YouTube guy he went to the suicide forest and actually found a body hanging there, and people were like, "Dude, gross!"
I do remember
because he like live streamed it, and he was like, "I don't know, I don't know how he reacted, but." Definitely poor taste, either way.
I remember that. Yeah, now he wants to fight, like, Conor McGregor. I was going to say Ewan McGregor.
Oh, no, I would watch that.
Ewan McGregor. Anyways, so can't you tell? I said dental records. I didn't mean dental records. Can't the police tell, like, how long the bodies had been, like, there based on?
Yeah, well, I guess they don't go into that.
I mean, how do they know it was unrelated? I mean, come on, there's two dead bodies here.
Well, they say that it's a drug deal gone bad, so I'm sure they were able to like place a story to the incident.
I don't know.
The drug dealer sent the police office a note.
We don't know nothing about no Ed Baker. What do you mean? Two wives in 1 month? What are you talking about?
Two wives in a week, actually. Just keep eating your spaghetti, Fat Tony.
We take responsibility for the 20-year-old kid. We just don't take responsibility for the 55-year-old.
Yeah. We don't know about that billionaire that shot himself and then set his car on fire. We never said that.
It's search party. The cop? Remember the cop who accidentally shoots that person and then just makes up a random gangster person name? And I think gets away with it. Dude, you and Jaws need to – I keep telling you, man.
I know. You keep telling us.
Season 4 just – they just put it – it's complete. They just put out season 4. Dude, you're like – it's a one-of-a-kind show because it's like funny, but it's also like surrealist and dark and like a mystery. Mm-hmm. And it's
– Okay. We'll get on it.
Please, dude, because I know Jocelyn's going to be like, fuck yeah. Like, I mean, every episode you're going to be like, fuck, what the fuck's going to happen next? What the fuck?
Okay.
Can we talk about the shitty arson investigator of this?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember the arson investigator. Tell me more.
Let's get back to talking about the burned out Jag. Oof,
that's the real crime, burning the Jag.
Right? So they found a gun. They found his body torched. I guess the story is maybe he killed himself and lit himself on fire. There's one missing bullet, right?
No, they're all there because it's a revolver. Just one of the bullets had an indentation on the firing or on the primer indicating that the firing pin had struck it. The remaining five bullets in the gun had discharged, but the primers were still intact, indicating that they exploded from the heat of the fire.
From the heat and not the pin.
Nice. So that day that the body's found, that the Jaguar is found, a letter is delivered to Mr. Ward Busey, who is Baker's attorney. And it said, if you're reading this, I'm dead. And it had a couple of instructions and nothing that the only thing that he shared was that it had some directions to deliver a letter to Sandy. That was his new wife. And she, according to Unsolved Mysteries, she moved to Europe and always believed that it was a mafia hit. There was an eyewitness that they vaguely mentioned that said that they saw a blue pickup truck speeding away from the area where the body was found. I think it said that it was a blue pickup truck with like
a blue
shiny, shiny chrome wheel or something. There was some other detail, I think. But most people are thinking that it was a suicide. Something else that backs that up is apparently he had called his insurance company to ask if they would pay out his life insurance policy if he did kill himself.
Question though,
and they
said do they know if it was actually him who called the life insurance policy or if it wasn't?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you know,
it could have been somebody else,
for the,
somebody
like, the from mafia, the mob. If we kill this guy and it looks like a suicide, is the family still going to get paid and are we going to get paid out?
Why would they care if they got paid unless they're just like, maybe we don't want this lady to just be destitute?
Well, they want their money back.
Want their money. So they thought, well, if we kill this guy,
and then hound the wife for
then
the money,
press the wife for the cash.
Yeah, why not? Yeah,
it's fucked up, yo.
Well, but what I wanted to say was the they brought in an arsonist investigator to like investigate the crimes, and he's like, oh, there's no way someone would dump 3 gallons of gas on themselves, light themselves, then be able to shoot themselves. It's like, yes, but what if they doused the car in gasoline, took like a newspaper, lit the newspaper, tossed it in the back seat?
Yeah, create like a delay also.
And then fired and then. You're already dead by the time the entire car is engulfed.
Yeah, there's lots of ways. You could just, because he said he lit himself on fire. He poured gasoline on himself, and it's like, all right, start at the feet. And then just drop the match and just immediately, like in one foul motion. Ugh, it's fucked up to think about, but it's not like.
Seems like this arsonist investigator wasn't all that good.
Yeah, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he could have done both of those things. At one point, somebody says that maybe he had an accomplice that helped him kill himself. And then, of course, there's the idea of an accomplice that helped him escape, who helped him get away.
It was the other kid that was there, lying there, the young man who was beaten to death. He helped him, and then he beat himself to death.
They were actually lovers.
I mean, that's a more interesting story, but I think maybe he helped this dude burn the car and a body, and then he... killed him and beat him.
And then he killed him. That's what I think.
No. They have nothing to do with each other. Some people think it's just as simple as somebody, one of these the mafia people just paid somebody to kill Baker and they did it and that's it. He owes me money. Here's money. Kill him. End of story. Make him disappear. But the lawyer thinks that he did kill himself. Because he's like, this letter said, if you're reading this, I'm dead. And it seemed very like specific. And he thinks that he just, he was in a difficult spot. There was, tax issues and legal issues and, you know, his business and his fortune and his world was crumbling in on him. So maybe he just wanted to kill himself and give his, wife, some money because, help her out.
Just to help her. Hey, get yourself a new face.
Yeah. And the whole faking his own death, Stack even says, despite conclusive evidence to the contrary. Like, I don't know if there's specifics of them being able to find out definitively that it was Ed Baker's body, but I'm guessing they did somehow.
I can't tell. His face is melted. By the way, he's had two of them, so how am I going to know?
Yeah. Which face is this? But this case remains completely unsolved. But yeah, it's, I'm sure he just owed money to the wrong people.
Yeah. Play with poop, you're going to get dirty.
Yeah. And then there's a couple of updates. There's a Lost Loves about this sister who found her long lost twins, and it was a cute reunion. And then there's an interesting update. There's an interesting, update or like case about the original World Trade Center bombing in 93.
Yeah.
They were looking for this one specific guy who they thought was associated, but they weren't able to find. And the update to that is they eventually found him in Pakistan, and he is definitely serving time for the bombing of the...
Yeah, they were also from Afghanistan as well. Just like the last one.
Like the one that succeeded, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because you always hear about... mostly from that Biggie song, Juicy.
Yeah.
But you hear about the World Trade's blowing up in the 90s.
People didn't realize that they tried it once before and it didn't work.
The basement, yeah.
There's actually a great documentary on the Discovery Channel about it.
Oh, is there? About the first one or the second one?
Yeah, about the first one. Like, it goes into detail about how they were able to do a delayed fuse by wrapping the fuse in plastic tubing to limit the amount of air that was exposed to the fuse. Like, it goes into depth, like detail.
I wonder since some of those dudes were Afghani, if that led to the whole everybody thinking that Afghanistan was the responsible party for 9/11.
Well, part of the people that
weren't most of the people that actually were involved with the planes and stuff, weren't they Saudi?
Well, no, they were funded by Saudi Arabia. But
I thought a couple of them were actual Saudis.
There were a few Saudis, but they were mainly funded by Saudi Arabia. But the kicker is the people that planned the first World Trade bombing were the same people that planned and executed 9/11.
Yeah. So either Man, way.
I watched some of the documentaries again. I don't even know why. I went in this rabbit hole and I started watching, I think I watched like some YouTube clip or I think maybe what started it. It doesn't matter. I went down this rabbit hole.
About 9/11?
Yeah. So I watched it again. I had seen them all before, like kind of a few years ago. I watched them again recently, like last year. And man, it's still so crazy seeing that raw, like that footage, man. Oh, dude, the people.
You know what I suggest? Because everything, especially when you read about that stuff and you see those YouTube videos, what I suggest for anybody who wants to know about 9/11 is go to Last Podcast on the Left, because they have like a three-parter which goes into the facts, the conspiracies, and why all the conspiracies are such fucking bullshit. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's not preachy. One episode is the story. One episode is all the crazy. And then the last episode is pretty much an explanation of why all the crazy is complete rubbish.
I like that.
And it's really interesting because if you hear them, if you know them, they're silly but they do really good research, and they're people that want to, it's kind of like how I am. Like, I'm super skeptical. I want to believe in everything. I want to hear all the stories, but at the end of the day, like, you know, I feel like I still live in reality. I still live, you know, on round planet Earth.
So yeah, it's crazy. I don't know about like all the conspiracies and stuff. I'm just talking about like the news footage that they showed.
Oh yeah. Like, it's heartbreaking.
It's crazy. But what's crazy to me is there's people that are alive, like young adults that were not around when 9/11 happened. So like, I remember what I was doing. I remember I was in school, and I'm sure.
Yeah. I was in sixth grade. Yeah.
Everybody who lived it knew where they were, knew, remember what happened. But, if you don't know anything about it, if you weren't alive, if you didn't like, just, I would recommend going back and like watching a documentary, listen to last podcast on the left, and just, yeah, it was crazy.
They do good. I was listening to Horatio Sands' podcast, and they were talking about, the week that that happened and how they went on the air and did SNL. Like,
oh yeah, that was huge.
Is really interesting. Like, I've heard a couple different SNL cast members from that era talk about that 9/11 week in 2001, which was a great cast, by the way. Like the Will Ferrell, you know, Jimmy yeah. Fallon era, and they felt like it was their duty to like cheer up the world, especially them being live from New York and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it was. I remember hearing that too, and that was a big deal. But no, I feel like, yeah, dude, it's definitely super important, especially now. Like, I feel like that brought us together as a nation. It's so sad that that happened, but like, looking back at like how divided our politics are now, like, I feel so like upset that it took something like that to unite the country. Mm. And like,
oh, well, guess what's uniting the country now?
What's that?
Everybody believes that Robin Hood is,
that's
is
true.
Fucking up by, you know, the whole stonk situation, the whole GameStop, yeah. the yeah. whole pump and dump.
And that's definitely
Ted
wrong.
Ted Cruz agreed with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So
yeah.
that's something. And then she turned around and fucking shredded him on Twitter. It's pretty funny.
God.
Did you see it? She was like, no. I'm willing to work with Republicans, but you sent a mob of people to try to kill me last week, so sit this one out, please.
Oh, dear. It's just brutal, man. Like, honestly, that's something that, like, I don't know what's going to bring people together, but it's going to stay that way until something major like that happens, unfortunately.
Aliens.
Stonks. Yeah.
Stonks. Hopefully some people made money. I tried making a Robinhood account, but I was too late.
Yeah, it's fucked. I'm still being
verified.
Dan could do a whole pot. Yeah. So the next two episodes is going to be Dan talking about stonks, and then the next one is just going to be me talking about Buffy. I will not be on the stonks one, and he will not be on the Buffy one.
It's just going to be you guys just ranting, just monologuing.
Just kidding.
A filibuster? But, it's just a filibuster.
Of we'll you be both. Back with more Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, dude, that's funny.
But thanks anyways. Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. Maybe we'll come back with a fun mystery movie, but we'll be back next week as soon as we can. Season 5, episode 5. Thank you, Eli Dominguez. I've been David Howell. Thank you, Daniel Benavidez.
Yeah, people get mad that we don't know who's talking. Who's who?
Yeah, that
we're telling you right
the,
now.
The person who just said that was Eli.
We're telling you right now.
For the rest, use context clues.
I'm Dan, signing off as Dan Benavidez.
Plum Dan.
I was trying to think of a funny name, but I got nothing.
I got nothing either.
I'm David.
I'm Eli.
I'm C. David Howell, not to be mixed up with C. Thomas Howell, famous actor from features films such as Hitch. No, The Hitcher. Not Hitch.
With Will
Smith. The Hitcher and The Outsiders.
With Will Smith?
Yeah, that's Hitch.
That lovable Smith comedy?
Kevin.
Kevin James.
Yeah, I was going to say Kevin Smith, but that's not.
No, he gets okay. mad.
Yeah, yeah. He's so much cooler than Kevin James. Anyway, thanks, guys. Thanks for hangs. Thanks for being with us.
Man, if you made it to the end, hit that subscribe.
If you haven't yet. For every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth. Perhaps that someone is listening, and perhaps that someone is you. Good night.